All right, so we'll talk about Pesach today. So let's start with the four sons, right? The Arba Banim. How many Banim do you have? Four. Which ones?
I only have one.
You only have one?
Chacham.
Chacham? The Chacham, the Rosham, right? Who else?
Seine Dei Yishol is the last one.
Yishol, right?
Chacham, Rosham.
And last one?
And isn't that the last one?
Shane, yeah, that's the last one. We're missing one. Chacham Rasha, Shane Del Yisrael, and?
Doesn't know what to ask.
The other one that...
Shane Del Yisrael.
What's the third one?
The Tam.
Oh, yeah, the Tam.
Tam Uhoimer.
Yeah, so first of all, the question is, why do we have four sons? What is it about, you know, you have like four different sons, four different personalities? Okay. Well, what is that all about, right? In the Torah, right, when it comes to the mitzvah of teaching Torah, There's no teaching Torah in four different ways, right? You teach Torah to this guy that way, you teach Torah to that guy that way. All of a sudden, when it comes to Seder night, when you want to tell over a story, you have to tell a different story to each son. What's going on about? What's going on? Why is that?
Because some people don't understand.
Some people don't understand the story? Well, you're telling over a story. Story time, right?
If I tell you a story...
Yeah?
If you're smart... You can grasp it. If you're not so bright, you're not going to grasp all the little intricacies.
Right.
Well, you got to teach them in the capacity that they understand. If you talk to me,
the question is why
over my head.
Yeah, but why specifically when it comes to Seder night? Comes to telling over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, all of a sudden over there you have four different sons. What is it? Okay, Gadol Bincha, one son. Done. Doesn't say, Gadol Tal Arba Banim, doesn't say that on the Pasuk.
If you get some smart kids and you get some... Not every kid is the... Not every kid is this... Has the same... Secho.
Question, why four, not ten?
Well...
It can be more than...
Yeah, okay.
Different level of understanding.
Yeah, I'm saying you can go into each and every son and understand, like, why...
Why is this four?
You know, what's the unique aspect of each one. But let's first talk in general, right? Talk in general of why... First of all, why is the Seder night so important? Right? What is it about Seder night that we find that there is a special mitzvah of Kol Marvel Asapa or Ezem Shubach? Right, the more you tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the better. Right, what is it? What is it about Pesach? So, in order to understand that, we really need to take a step back and understand what the fundamentals of Yiddishkeit, of Judaism, is all about. Right. So, Yetzias Mitzrayim is obviously the bedrock, the foundation of Yiddishkeit. So, if you compare the bedrock, the foundation of Yiddishkeit, to other religions, what are we going to get? So let's start with the two main other religions, which are Islam and Christianity. Right? Islam, the bedrock of Islam is what happened, right?
Muhammad was strict, was smoking some hashish, and he saw the angel Gabriel talking to him,
right.
Whatever.
Right. Could have been marijuana, you never know. I think marijuana is legal now, don't forget.
I heard the joke, Pitum Kateret, that's what you
got. Very good.
Why not to say he was dreaming?
Yeah, he was dreaming and the angel came to him, right, and gave him the Quran. Yeah. Right, is that true? Maybe, maybe not. Right, I don't know. Maybe he had a dream, maybe he had a stomach ache, I don't know. Mm. Right, anything could have happened.
No, but... Nothing wrong to sleep everything.
What's that?
What is wrong to sleep? Different story. I can sleep well as a lot of story.
Right. Yeah, you dream about anything.
The question is real or not.
Right, exactly.
Usually exactly. I don't believe what is.
Right.
What you're trying to get at is just only one person
right.
Come up with something here.
Right. Now, when you compare that to Christianity... Right? What happened with Christianity? Christianity is a little bit more credible, right? Christianity did not actually start with Jesus himself. It started many years after he died, when a bunch of his students witnessed the resurrection of Jesus. So it was a bunch of students and a bunch of swooning women. Women that were fainting, going in and out of consciousness. Now, nothing against women, but swooning women, right, not exactly the most credible group of people, right? They're fainting, they're going in and out of consciousness. So you have a group of either fainting people or a group of students that if Jesus didn't come back, they're going to be out of a job, right? So people, either biased people or fainting people, not exactly the most credible group to found the beginning of a religion, right? So that's when you compare Judaism to Islam and Christianity. What happened with Judaism? Right, what happened? We know how many people witnessed the Mount Torah and Har Sinai?
Millions, sorry. 600,000 over the age of 20.
Well, 600,000 men from the ages of 20 to 60.
Yeah.
Right, now, probably an equal amount of women.
Millions.
Right, so that's 1.2 million people from the ages of 20 to 60, plus all the children under 20, all the people over 60, right? You come to about 2.5, 3 million people, right? A lot of people. Talking about a lot of people. Right, now, the question is, how do we know that, in fact, there were a lot of people there? Who says? Because the Torah says? It says it in the Torah? Okay. Why should we believe the Torah? Right, so let's try to analyze the possibilities and see what exactly happened at Har Sinai. Right, so option number one is that Moshe Rabbeinu was a very charismatic leader, and somehow he managed to convince the Jews that they maybe hypnotized them, or they took a part on this major event where there was this mountain and lightning and this light show and thunder, and he comes out with these two tablets, and boom, right? This is your Torah, right? Is that a very credible possibility? Not so much. Why not? So let's see. Imagine for a minute, right? I'm telling you, I was driving from my house on the way to Maariv, and, it was dark night, no other cars on the road. As I'm driving, this saucer lands on top of my car. 10 green aliens come out of the saucer, dance around my car.
Wow!
Yeah. And
came out of where?
The saucer landed from outer space. Well, landed on my car.
Oh, you mean a flying saucer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then 10 green aliens started dancing around my car, got back into the saucer, and they flew away. I'm telling you what happened. Right? Would you believe me?
No.
The Mormons believe he saw a light.
He saw a light, right.
That's what it all depends.
Morons.
It all depends if I know you or I don't know you. If I don't know you...
If you know me, right?
I'll say,
okay, but if you do know me, right?
If I know you and I know you're sensible and everything else and you wouldn't have these things, is, well, maybe... Maybe okay. You thought you saw that.
No,
you could have banged your head against the wall or something.
Maybe I took some marijuana. Maybe I was, drunk. Who knows what?
A lot of people who saw a difference in
right, exactly.
Society.
Right. But do we know, did they actually see it? I don't know. Maybe they did. Maybe they didn't. No. Right? Could be. But maybe, like you said, maybe I thought I saw it, but I didn't actually see it. What if I told you something else? What if I told you, remember, right, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, whatever it was, we were sitting here in the Navi class, right, we were learning Navi, and a saucer flew out of that window, landed on this table right here, 10 green aliens jumped out of the saucer, danced around us for 30 seconds, got back into the saucer and flew away. You remember it happened, right? You saw that, right? We were all there, we experienced it together, right? You remember that.
How much are you paying me?
Right?
Last
right? What would you say? What would you tell me? You're crazy. Yeah. We never saw that.
Delusional.
Right? It's one thing if you think you saw it, but you're telling me that I saw it? Right? That's ridiculous. Right? So the fact that you know, a bunch of Jews believe that they saw something, right? They themselves are giving testimony, they saw it, I saw it. Right? That in and of itself is a very strong proof, right? The some of the commentaries explain, right? The fact that the Jews, of all people, believe that they saw it, that is the biggest proof of all. Why? Because it's hard enough to convince Jews that they saw what they did see, right? Let alone what they didn't see, right? So, right? So the fact that they believe that the Jews themselves believe that they saw it, right? Right? They're not arguing, oh, did it really happen? Didn't really happen? I don't know, right? They say if a Jew is stuck, right, on an island in the middle of nowhere, right? How many shuls does he build?
Two.
Why? One that he davens in, and one that he doesn't daven in.
Yeah.
Right? Jews always have to argue, right? They always have to come up with a reason of why not. So the fact that the Jews believe that they saw it, that in and of itself is really a big proof in and of itself. So that's option number one. Not very plausible that Moshe somehow managed to convince the Jewish people that they saw something that they didn't really see. Okay, what's option number two? Option number two is that, yeah, you know, something actually happened. You know, we were Egyptians living in Egypt, and we kind of like decided to take a little trip out to the desert. We went backpacking in the Sinai Desert. And, you know, we kind of like jumped over a little puddle, right? And we saw these like cute little like tablets, you know, that had like little manuscript on them. You know, and, you know, this became the story, this tale that we tell over. And over the years, it got exaggerated way out of proportion, right? The puddle turned into, like, a little pond. The pond turned into, like, a bigger pond. Eventually, it became the Red Sea. And these two tablets became, you know, these, like, major, like, you know, miraculous tablets. And this mountain turned into this huge mountain, right? With this, like, lightning show and thunder, right? And over the years, it got way exaggerated, way, way out of proportion. Right, until today, we have this like amazing event that took place, right, with the splitting of the sea, and all the Egyptians died, they were chasing us, but it really never really happened, right? It was just like this tale that, you know, got exaggerated way out of proportion. Is that an option? Is that a plausible possibility?
Well, he made up the whole thing.
They didn't make up the whole thing. It was like a cute little story. A little bit of it happened, but it got exaggerated over the generations, right? It got exaggerated way out of proportion. Could that be?
Well, anything can be exaggerated.
Right. So maybe the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim got exaggerated.
I saw it on TV. It must be true.
Oh, right. You saw it on TV, right? If you saw a movie, if it's in Hollywood, then it must be true, right?
I had this tenant. This was true. Schwarzel. And it was before Pesach, and I'll collect the rent next week on a certain day. I says, I won't be here. She says, why not? I says, it's a holiday. She says, what holiday? I says, Passover. This is someone who grew up in Boston, probably went to school. I don't know where she probably slept through all the classes. What Passover? I never heard of that holiday. I says, you ever see the movie, The Ten Commandments? She says, yeah. Well, I says, that's part of my people. She says, you people still around? That's true.
Wow.
That's true.
It's your own joke.
Wow.
Passover, everybody knows.
Nowadays, how can anybody say they never heard of Passover when you have all advertisements all over the place? Kushel of Pesach, get this for this, get this.
Right.
Everything on the internet and on television tells you about all the holidays. They talk about every holiday.
Right.
How can you get away not knowing what it is?
There's something like 86,000 different religions in the world.
Really? 86,000?
86,000.
No, but this is a
true
religion.
You live here in Malden. You go into Chelsea, you go into Dorchester, Roxbury, every other building is a church. Everyone
right.
Get their own. They got a pastor. right? That's the right word.
Yeah, pastor, yeah.
And everyone got their own religion. You watch on TV.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Where
I live. Hey, send your money.
Yeah, where I live, you go every corner, it's a different church. Different. Yeah. One is in Baptist, one is a Lutheran, one is a...
Too many different churches, Christianity.
In Christianity...
But Christianity, they probably...
By the Protestants, it is...
But Christianity, it's...
Beliefs are here. There's hundreds.
Yeah. Who's getting arrested?
They gave us a signal. Those are the guys that came on in a saucer.
There you go. Here's the saucer. It's coming in.
Watch for it.
Right. Okay, so why is that possible? Why is that option not very plausible? Because if, in fact, the story got exaggerated, why is it that every single Jewish community around the world, right, you walk into a theater, no matter where you go, right, you walk into a theater in Malden, you walk into a theater in New York, Chicago, L.A., France, Germany, Poland, Russia, Antarctica, wherever you walk into the theater, you tell over the exact same story, down to the smallest detail. If in fact it got exaggerated, then you would have 10 different stories, right? Because it would get exaggerated in every community in a different way, right? Why is it that we have an identical story no matter what Jewish community you go to, right? So clearly, the story did not get exaggerated, because every Jewish community around the world has the exact same story down to the detail. All right, so that possibility is not very plausible either. What's the third possibility? A third possibility is that really the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim never happened. Right? Never happened, never took place. Right? You were Jews, you were living in Egypt, in Israel the whole time. Never happened. But after the second exile, after the first exile, after the destruction of the first temple, the Jewish people were in a very low place. The moral was very low. People moving back to Israel were only the poor people. They didn't have much to their name. They didn't have anything to lose, so they moved back to Israel. Ezra was the one who led them. And he wanted to up the morale of the people. So, it was a rainy day. He had nothing better to do. So he came up with this amazing story of, oh guys, you know where we actually come from? We actually come from ancient Egypt, right? We were slaves there for 210 years, and then God brought these 10 plagues upon the Egyptians, and they were forced to let us go, right? We went into the desert, and, went into the Red Sea, and the Red Sea split. We were saved, though the Egyptians were killed, right? It's an unbelievable story, right? But really, it never happened. Just wanted to, to give the Jews some historical pride. That's all. Why is that possibility not very plausible?
Why is that more of a possibility?
Why is that not very plausible? Why can't it be that Ezra just made it up? He just made everything up. He wrote it down in the Torah, he wrote the Torah and everything. Why can't that be?
Spending 40 years in the desert, that's not a...
Okay, he made the whole thing up. It never actually happened. Right? So the reason why that can't be is because it wasn't just the fairy tale. The problem is that he attached to the story a Torah which is binding. Right? We have 613 mitzvahs that are binding. And actually the Gemara says when Ezra told the Jewish people, right, about when he was teaching Torah to them, they were crying. Right, because many of them were actually married family members, and that
married to their aunts.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Right, so the fact that the Jews follow the Torah, which is binding, we believe that it's binding. Right, that proves that he couldn't have just made it up. Because if he made it up, then okay, it's a very nice story, but I don't want to keep 613 rules. That's ridiculous. Right, it's a nice fairy tale, but I'm not doing this Torah thing, right? Keeping Shabbos kosher, right? Putting in tefillin at 6 o'clock in the morning. Hey, come on, that's crazy. It's ridiculous.
Why? But still, it's called scientific approach to the Torah. They found the different time, different people, different style. This is what is. But now, if you're not Jewish, it's not religion. You can find different books about what actually Torah is. It's another angle. It means it's made up. How to answer to this question?
You can't make have that story go on for so many years.
Even there is people, I believe it's even different people who wrote different parts, they have different names. J, something like that. But
if you look in the Torah, it mentions animals that have split hoofs and chew their cud and have horns. All right, but it only mentions a few animals, and no one was traveling the whole world just to find all those few animals. Go any other place. No one came to America in those days. No one came to, I don't know, wherever, the North Pole, South Pole. And you still don't find any animals that differ from those simonim.
Right. No, so that's another proof that the Torah is true. Right. Yeah, no, that's definitely true. But, right, I'm saying we're just focused on the story itself, right, to know that the story actually took place. Right, it wasn't, like, added on later as, like, another addition to the Torah. Right, so now, so let's go on to the next point. So, another proof that the story wasn't, that the Torah was not modified, over the generations, right, is as follows. Right, imagine for a minute, you're walking the Amazons, right? You have 10 people walking in the Amazons. Each one is walking, they're walking single file. Each one is within earshot of the next, right? So person number one is within earshot of person number two is within earshot of person number three, and so on. Right? Now person number 9 and 10 are walking all the way in the back. They're walking together. And all of a sudden person number 10 falls on the floor, has this crazy seizure going on. His tongue falls out, he's turning blue, right? And person number 9 wants to help him. But he can't, because he doesn't know what to do. It happens to be the person number 1 is a doctor. So he screams back to person number 8, describing the symptoms of what's happening to person number 10. And he sends a message all the way back to person number 1. Person number 1 tells person number 2 what to do, right? All the way back to person number 10. Right, and he saves his life.
Time to get stamped with him. It's not going to be the same thing.
Right. Wait, hold on. So that's the idea of broken telephone. Right. You know the kids play the game of broken telephone. Right. They pick a complicated word. They sit in the line, and then kid number one tells the kid number two, and so on until it gets to the end. By the end, it's a completely different word. Yeah. Right. That's the game. Right, in England they call it Chinese whispers for some weird reason. Not sure why. Now, how do we know that that didn't happen with the Torah? Because in the case of the people walking the Amazons, when they walk and they have to pass on the message from the doctor all the way back to the end of the line, they're going to make sure that every single detail is going to be accurate. Why? Because they know that the life of person number 10 depends on this. If they miss out a detail, right, he might die. So they're going to make sure. It's not just a game, right? In the game, it's fun, right? If things get confused and messed up, that's part of the enjoyment. But over here, it's exactly the opposite. Everything is crucial. Every tiny little detail is crucial. So too with the Torah. We believe that our eternal well-being depends on every single small detail that we keep in the Torah. Therefore, we have to make sure that every detail that's passed on is going to be exact and accurate. Right, so that's another proof that the Torah wasn't just made up or changed along the generations. Now, when it comes to Seder night, what do? We do all these weird customs. Right? We have a Seder plate, we have like burnt little chicken neck, right? We have another egg, we have a piece of lettuce, you know, some apple salad, and some horseradish salad. Right? What's the deal with that? Right? If you would ask me, I would design a Seder that would have been much more effective. Yeah? If you want to feel like you really left Egypt, really experienced slavery, and you left Egypt, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. This year, right? I'll invite you guys to my Seder, and this is what we're going to do. I'm going to invite you guys up into Group A and Group B. Right? Group A, I'm going to give them whips and bats. And Group B is going to be given bricks and mortar. And I'm going to tell Group A, you guys are in charge of Group B. You have to beat them up while they build pyramids in my backyard. Right? Keep on beating them. Right? In the middle of the night, switch. Now Group B, you guys beat up Group A while they build pyramids in my backyard. Right? And then, after a few hours, I'll let you go. And you're really going to feel like you left Egypt. You're really going to feel like what it means to be free. Now, you might not come back to my Seder next year. But at least you'll know what it feels to be free. To be a real slave and to be freed. Why don't we do that? Or better yet, why don't we put up a play? Right? We'll hire actors from Hollywood or from Broadway. We'll have a play, right? Every Seder, we'll come together to the shul. We'll sit in the social hall. We'll have a play, right? Of what actually happened in Egypt. We'll have all these actors and props. It'll be amazing, right? Unbelievable, right? Why don't we do that? Sounds like a much more effective way than eating some lettuce and dry crackers.
And a hard-boiled egg.
And a hard-boiled egg.
Actually, this has happened on Purim. We have very common to have performances about the story.
Right. Why don't we do that on Pesach? Why not?
Tradition.
Tradition. Yeah. Okay. But why is this tradition meaningful? Why is eating lettuce and dry bread make you feel like you left Egypt?
It described in Itagada what it means, everything.
Okay, yeah, but all these weird customs of, like, you know, dipping the cucumbers in salt water, right?
Say he uses cucumbers.
Right, it's cucumber, celery, potatoes, whatever it is.
Neil uses lettuce and potatoes, and I use scallions.
Any scenario can be criticized.
I can't stand scallions.
This is one of possible ideas.
That's what he uses for that. I need a potato.
Okay, to each their own.
The other stuff that doesn't do it for me.
No? Okay. But again,
not an onion man.
So Chazal, they designed the Seder for a purpose, for a reason. Right, the question is, why? What does this do?
Who first to design this?
Chazal designed it, yes.
This is after.
Yes.
The term from
symbols.
Yeah. So in order to understand that, we need to appreciate what we're doing at the Seder. Right, so in Judaism, we believe that time passes in a spiral kind of way. Meaning what? Right, take year number one, first year of creation. Right, so imagine you have this elevator cabin. Right, the elevator cabin moves, right, in a spiral kind of way. Right, day one, day two, day three, day four, 100, day 200, day 300, day 365. The elevator cabin moves up one floor and starts to circle all over again, right? And then year three moves up another floor and again, right? So it's a spiral. All the way till year 2019 in Malden, Massachusetts. So what do we do? We're doing is we are tapping in to the events that happened in this same elevator shaft, now that we're tapping into the light that's deep, deep down in this elevator shaft, thousands of years ago, right? But every single year, that time of year, right, the 15th of Nisan in that year, is we still have the light of what happened many, many years ago, down, all the way down in that elevator shaft. Why? Because time is a spiral. Does that make sense? Yeah? So we're tapping into the light of what happened many, many years ago, right? All the way down in that elevator shaft. Now the question is, how do we do that? How do we tap into that light? Right? Again, we're talking about a spiritual sense, right? It's not a physical elevator. It's a spiritual sense. Right? So let me give you an analogy. Imagine I wanted to transfer data, right, from my phone to my computer. So what would happen if I go to a caveman, right? I take a caveman, right, out of his cave, and I tell him, listen, I want to transfer some data from this, right, to the laptop, right? What should I do? Yeah? Explain to him in sign language, whatever it is, right? So what is he going to tell you? Very simple, right? You want to transfer from one thing to the next? I go back to my cave. I have a really, really tight rope, right? I'll take the rope, wrap it around your computer and your phone, right? Really, really tight.
Together.
Right? And it's going to push the data from the phone into the laptop, right? That's what he would tell me. Because that's all he understands. But because I'm not a caveman, and I actually live in a modern world, I know that what you need is a cable, right? A very specific cable with the right insert, right? You take the cable, you plug it into the phone, it's in this tiny little hole over here, take the other end, plug it into the laptop, and boom, the data transfers from my phone through the cable all the way into the computer, right? Within a few seconds. Unbelievable. The caveman does not understand that. He doesn't get it. So too, we are also cavemen when it comes to spirituality. We don't understand necessarily what we need to do in order to tap into the light of what happened thousands of years ago. And that's why Chazal come along and they tell us, you want to tap into the light? You want to get the energy of the events that happened thousands of years ago? What do you need to do? You need to eat some lettuce. Eat some matzah. Right? That's going to affect your neshama in a very deep and fundamental way. You might not understand it. Just like the caveman doesn't understand how the data transfers from my phone to the data through that tiny little cable. But that's what needs to be done in order for our neshama to be affected by the Yetzias Mitzrayim that happened many, many thousands of years ago. So now, when we come back to the four sons, what's happening? The reason why you have to tell over the story to the four sons is because we want each son to be affected by the light, right, the energy that took place in Yetzias Mitzrayim. In order to do that, we have to custom design the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim to his needs in particular. And so that's why we have four different sons. And to each son, we got to tell the story in a different way. Because he needs to get it. His neshama needs to be affected by the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim. What does it say in the Pasuk? L'man tesaper be'ozne bincha u'ben bincha. You have to tell over to the ears of your son and your grandson. Well, what does it mean to the ears of your son? Obviously, you're telling it to his ears. You're not telling it to his big toe. What does it say, be'ozne bincha, the ears of your son? Because you have to tell it to him over in a way where he's going to hear it. He's going to accept it. He's going to appreciate it and acknowledge this is the story. Because his neshama has to be affected, has to be impacted by the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's why it also says, Man tasaber b'ozni mincha o ben mincha, your son and your grandson. Why your son and your grandson? First of all, because the grandfather, if you get it from the father, that's great. But if you get it from the grandfather is one link closer to the original story, when the story took place.
The original story, yeah.
That's one reason. Another reason is because not only do you want to tell it over to your son, but you want to tell it over in a way where your son is going to want to tell it over to his son. Right? You want it to go further. Because this is the bedrock, this is the foundation of Yiddishkeit, of Judaism. That's why it's so crucial and so important that each one of us gets a part of the story. And not only hears the story, but is deeply affected by the story. Because that's what's happening here. We have to get a part of the Seder, because that's how the data is going to be transferred over the generations to every different son.
You don't believe in Santa Claus?
I used to until my bar mitzvah. My father told me that was fake.
My son, when he was a kid, sitting on the porch, and the other kid says to him, "You don't believe in the Easter Bunny? The Easter Bunny is true."
When Chazal made this siddur, he actually still included all texts, but only actually siddur. Very different stories. He also from Chazal, or not?
Which stories?
No, what we read during Seder. Mm-hmm. Agadah, it's from everything from Chazal, or different people added something? No, very different story, but for example, there is no any mention about Moshe.
Right.
That is part of actually.
Yeah, no, that God was designed by Chazal, yeah.
It mentions Moshe one time.
Yeah, but he made different things, but even last one about.
It mainly mentions the stories about, you know, the Tanakh sages from the time of the Gemara.
I know.
Because that's when it was.
There are different names, but there is no. Actually. The Moshe. And many different ways. We know more about the stories in Haggadah.
Right. Anyway, okay, so I think we'll stop here. But I think we got a little bit more appreciation of what's happening at Seder night, what the Haggadah is all about.
You have to remember one thing.